This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg, and with that noise, we have entered an edible forest. I'm joined now by Jim Walla, a volunteer with the Northern Plains Botanic Garden Society, giving me a tour of this. Jim, thanks so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Happy to be here, and I was happy that you gave a call to line this up.
What is an edible forest?
An edible forest is, in this case, a demonstration orchard where we're demonstrating all the kinds of different fruit that can be grown in this region.
How many kinds of fruit? That's an overly broad question.
We have about 30 kinds of fruit in this orchard, with about 100 cultivars among those different kinds.
That's a much bigger number than I was anticipating hearing for North Dakota.
It is a good number, and this is about a half of what could be grown here.
Well, it's obvious people are going to think apples, raspberries, blueberries. Keep going here.
Well, blueberries people usually don't think of for our area, but...
No. But I'm ahead of the game there.
That's right. Apples, raspberries, and plums are probably about the most common fruits that people grow here. Mm-hmm. And we have those, but we have some variations on those too, so that people can learn a little bit more about them. For instance, we have them... apples on dwarf, semi-dwarf, and standard rootstock. So side by side, the same variety, so people can see over long term what those different rootstocks will do, how the trees will perform on those different kinds of rootstocks. But then we go beyond the average kind of fruit that's grown here. We have seedless grapes. We do have blueberries. Blueberries don't grow in our soil, but when we get in, so we can amend the soil, we put them in beds with a lower pH. They need a pH, soil pH from 4 to 5.5, and so we have a peat moss base for them, and that peat moss base started at 4, and that will gradually increase, so we'll manage that. We have some blueberries coming along on our plants this year, so for the first time. We have probably the most unusual is persimmons.
What? Here?
Yes, here. We don't have any fruit. The plants are still very small. But they've survived a couple winters now so far, and they're growing, and they should be hardy here. The plants will be hardy here. The question will be how often the fruit will mature here.
Okay.
Persimmons need to have a full season to mature and then get a hard freeze.
That part we can promise. The hard freeze.
We'll get a hard freeze. But will that come before the fruits are mature?
Yeah.
And I'm expecting about 50% of the years that we'll get that. Well, 50%, that's not... People can think of that as a glass half full or half empty. And just depends on how they look at it. A lot of our fruits have failure years. We might get a late freeze to reduce our apple crop. And so looking at it the same way, it's getting something like a persimmon in North Dakota would be, half the years would be amazing.
I would say so. I've got an apricot tree, and I feel like once every 5 years or so, I end up with apricots.
And that's about average, but here I've got an apricot tree, and we get apricots every year. It depends on how you handle them and where you plant them, and all that. So
neglect is not really the right
It's not a matter of neglect. It's a matter of knowing a few tricks and just getting it right.
Well, let's talk about those tricks here, because you said this is a demonstration orchard. Are you talking, you're working with, you know, the U of M and NDSU Extension, or you're working more with local gardeners, you're working with market producers?
All of the above. Okay. Not necessarily so much market producers, but we do have people that come here that are market producers or interested in market production, and seeing what we're doing and what we have and how we're growing them so that they can start market production on their own. But this is for anybody that's interested in fruit.
What's your interest in fruit?
When I was little, I can remember helping my dad and my grandpa prune their fruit trees and helping harvest and all that, and from that time on I've just had fruit trees, and in our yard at home we have 10 or 12 kinds of fruit trees and shrubs, and I grow just as much as I can. I just, when I worked at NDSU before I retired, some of my research projects involved diseases of fruit trees, choke cherries and juneberries and such.
Yeah.
And so just over a lifetime, my interest has developed.
Well, this forest pathology, and that's what you were doing with NDSU for your career. When we talk about diseases that are impacting trees, talk about the importance of diversity when it comes to disease tolerance.
Yeah, diversity is critical. If you have all one kind of plant and a disease comes in, it will affect all of your plants. If you have a diverse range of types of plants, a disease comes in. Most diseases are pretty specific to one kind of plant or just a few kinds of plants. So if you have diversity, then it will only affect a few kind of plants.
Mm-hmm.
That will make it easier to control or to manage in an orchard. And if it can't be controlled, then you'll only lose a little bit compared to losing everything.
But there is this idea, too, that, you know, there's 7 billion people in the world and we need to be feeding them. Do we compromise yield at all by having overstressing diversity?
For home production, you don't compromise yield because it's on a small scale.
Mm.
What you compromise is the potential for amount of fruit that you get. If you have all one kind of fruit in a backyard and a disease or an insect problem comes in, you're going to lose yours, but your neighbor probably won't. But when you get into commercial production, having diversity within a field is economically not feasible. It's like having a cornfield. Instead of having a cornfield, every other plant is a soybean or something like that. There's just too many obstacles to high production that way.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, you have to get into more and more management. It takes an incredible amount of management to handle a monoculture and prevent diseases and insect problems.
Mm-hmm.
For homeowners, we don't want to manage any more than what we absolutely need to. And so having diversity helps us.
Let's keep walking here as we progress along the edible forest. Now, a lot of these are the big pollinator mixes. These aren't necessarily fruiting trees, but the endangered species list now includes the monarch. Do you have any kind of special education or focus that you really want to get out there about the role of pollinators?
Most of our fruiting plants require pollination and insects to carry that pollen from one plant to another. And providing the food season-long for the pollinators to survive is critical for pollination for fruit production. And so we have pollinator mixes, mixes where the flowers are blooming season-long from early spring to late summer, so that they have a continual supply of nectar and pollen. And that will give us the pollinators to pollinate the flowers on our trees and shrubs.
What's going on over here at this pergola? I see a couple of kind of small plants here. Looks like they are, it's assumed they're going to get a lot bigger based on the structure they've been planted by. The Arctic Beauty Kiwi. This is not something I would anticipate seeing in a climate like ours. Despite the word Arctic in there, I'm focusing here on the word kiwi.
This is our Arctic Kiwi pergola. And it is intended for the kiwi plants to grow over it and provide shade, a nice setting for people to relax in our edible forest. There are three types of kiwi: a fuzzy kiwi that people buy in the store, a hardy kiwi, which is a vine that people are hardy to about 25 below, and Arctic Beauty Kiwi, that's hardy, a vine that's hardy to about 40 below. I know a number of people in North Dakota that are growing Arctic Beauty Kiwi, mm-hmm. and they are hardy here. They do produce here. Ours aren't doing great. You're right. They look like they are intended to cover the pergola, but they haven't done that yet. There's a little bit of increased vigor. I haven't grown them before, and so part of it is a learning curve. I think part of it might be some kind of soil issue. We're giving the plants a little bit of time and hoping that they'll take off. And this one that in front of us, September Sun, yeah, cultivar of Arctic Beauty Kiwi, is doing better this year than it has in past years. So maybe it's coming along. If it doesn't, in another year or two, we'll move it a little bit and try to deal with some of the possible soil issues. Arctic Beauty Kiwi, the fruit tastes just like fuzzy kiwi that you buy in the store. They're just smaller berries. There are getting to be bigger and bigger berry selections of Arctic Beauty Kiwi, and mm-hmm. September Sun is one of the bigger ones. Victor is an even bigger one, so they're getting to be grape size. So they're not in the same range as the fuzzy kiwis, but a grape size kiwi that you can grow here in North Dakota that tastes like the kiwis that you buy in the store is mm-hmm. a nice addition to what we can grow here.
It looks like we're coming up on some grapes. The cold hardy grape has been around a couple of decades, developed again by a couple of universities in this area. Now these are a table grape. Are the cold hardy grapes that have been developed around here, were those mostly for wine? Were they mostly for eating out of hand like this?
Oh, that's a long answer to a short question.
Okay.
University of Minnesota has been developing cold hardy grapes for a long time, mm-hmm. and there are some private breeders that have been developing cold hardy grapes for a longer time, and that's both wine grapes and table grapes. The University of Minnesota has been primarily involved in wine grapes. They are getting into table grape production. North Dakota State University has been involved in wine grape development for some time now, several years, and we have a couple of their pre-release selections in our orchard. My understanding that they will make the most cold hardy wine grapes of the highest quality in the world. So it's an exciting development.
Yeah.
Harlene Hadaman Valenti at NDSU is leading that project, and they are apparently very amazing grapes, and that could change the whole developing wine industry in North Dakota and adjacent northern Minnesota and on up into Canada. These grapes here are seedless grapes. Seedless grapes are marginally hardy here.
Okay.
So we are using some methods to help seedless grapes handle our winters.
Okay.
We use what's called a J-stem, where we bend the stem down along the ground for a ways before we allow the cane to come up. And if the top of the vine dies back, then it will sprout back from that stem that's on the ground. So rather than having to replant, it will quickly, probably in 2 years, be productive again. And we have our trellises set up so we can remove the supports and lay the vines down on the ground for the winter. And that will help us help them get through the winter because they'll have the snow cover to protect them.
Okay.
We've got a lot of grape clusters this year on some of these.
Mm-hmm.
Somerset Seedless is the variety that's the most cold hardy seedless grape.
If you were going to describe plant breeders in general, how would you describe them?
I didn't expect that question. Plant breeders, they are very specialized in a specific kind of plant.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know a lot about a particular kind of plant to get into breeding them to really make any progress. So there are plant breeders that specialize in red raspberries, even more specifically in Primacane variety red raspberries, even more specifically in cold hardy Primacane red raspberries. There's somebody at NDSU that is looking into breeding cold hardy, non-suckering purple raspberries, which is a hybrid between red and black raspberry.
Okay.
So it's very specific. You have to really know a lot about the topic to make any progress. You have to know everything that's out there, all the material that's out there, and what the limitations are, what the opportunities are. It's an incredible job that they have.
Well, and then there's kind of this personality element of there's a little bit of what other people might call playing God, but then also very much the realization that still Mother Nature is the one in charge here.
Playing God, the plants have been crossing on their own for centuries, long before plant breeders got involved, and that's where a lot of our plant varieties came from, just selection of superior material that's already out there. And so plant breeders get into managing those crosses. And now there's plant breeders that are inserting particular genes into plants as part of the plant breeding process.
Can they make a celery that tastes like a marshmallow yet?
I don't know.
I'm just putting that idea out there.
I expect they'll be able to.
We are standing amongst raspberries here. Roughly how many different cultivars of raspberries are we looking at here?
We have 9 cultivars of red raspberries.
Okay.
3 of yellow raspberries, 3 of black raspberries, 3 of purple raspberries, and then we have 4 blackberry cultivars. Blackberries is similar to raspberries, but not usually considered to be hardy here.
Hmm.
But they are. Just
no
people
idea.
Don't.
There were
people
this
aren't aware
many
of it.
Kinds.
There are hundreds of kinds of red raspberries.
Yeah.
And within red raspberries, there's a lot of different traits. Important for us in North Dakota is that they mature early enough for our growing season, and that they survive our winters.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've made selections that are what I consider the best tasting among those that handle our winters and mature in our growing season.
Mm.
We can make great advances in what people usually grow for raspberries in North Dakota.
Are you doing any breeding? Like, have you come up with a cultivar?
No. I've done some crosses for apples and apricots.
Ooh,
and I've done some selections for mulberries.
I've heard there's something special about mulberries here.
Yeah, we have a Trader mulberry.
Okay, what is that?
Planted over here.
Let's go find Trader it.
Trader is the family name of a person that brought a bunch of fruit trees to the United States when he immigrated from Germany in the 1860s.
Okay, so this is not a Benedict Arnold Trader.
No, Trader is in trading goods. That Trader mulberry is still on the original homestead up by Valley City.
Oh, wow.
After 130 years, he settled there in 1892. Tree is still alive and producing berries. Shirttail relative of the family contacted me about propagating after they had difficulty, and I was able to propagate it. And after a few years, we decided, you know, this has really good traits. Let's talk about releasing as a new cultivar. It was patented as a cultivar in 2016, and I've been selling it out of my little backyard nursery for several years now, and it's been picked up by some other nurseries. We've licensed some other nurseries now, and it's coming on the market, on a larger market commercially.
What is the process of patenting and licensing?
Well, I understand you can patent a plant by yourself. It's a lot more detailed than what I care to get into. There's enough legal things that it's sort of like drawing up your own will. You can do it yourself, but but you might make some mistakes and you don't want to do that. So we went to a patent attorney, and they let us through the process. Basically, we needed to come up with a very good description of the plant, all the leaf traits, all the berry traits, the bark traits, the plant hardiness traits, those kind of things, and compare it with any other similar plants to show that it was really something new.
Yeah.
And once we did that, then the patent attorney took it the rest of the way and submitted it to the U.S. Patent Office, and after a couple of years, then it was approved and patented.
And so there are specific metrics that you have to hit to get it to differentiate? I mean, is it the size of the leaf, the length of the fruiting season? What do you have to hit to make it its own thing?
It just has to be different than anything else that's known. And size of leaf, leaf traits, berry traits, so shininess of the leaf surface, hairs on the stem of the leaf, and how the veins stick out on the bottom of the leaf, all play a role in specific traits of any individual plant. There are 3 mulberry species in the United States that can be grown in the United States. One is black mulberry, based on the species name, not the traits, and that's basically a tropical plant. There's red mulberry that's native in the United States, and there's white mulberry, which Trader Mulberry, we've identified Trader Mulberry to be, that originated in Asia, was transferred into Europe and Eastern Asia, including Siberia, and we think that Mr. Trader had access to some really cold hardy plant material when he was in Germany, and was able to bring some of that material over with him. The Germans during the 1800s were incredible plant explorers and collectors, and so they had arboreta of many different kinds of trees of a wide diversity of genetics of those trees. So they, in Germany, they may have accumulated germplasm from, say, northern Russia, and were growing it there in Germany, and then Mr. Trader was able to access that and bring it along with him. I know of no other explanation for why Trader Mulberry would be so hardy, because there's nothing else like it that I know of.
Yeah, you have to be kind of plant detective here.
You have to be a plant nerd.
Anything else you want to show me?
Let's talk about the nut trees.
What kind of nuts are we talking here?
We have chestnuts.
Okay.
We have pecans. We have hickories. We can grow walnuts and butternuts here, but we don't have any in our orchard. Our space in the orchard is fairly limited.
Yeah, how big of a space is this?
It's about 1 acre. So here's a northern pecan, ultra northern pecan. Pecans that you buy in the store are southern pecans. They can be grown maybe up into Kansas and Missouri.
Okay.
But once you get into Kansas and Missouri, they need a little bit more hardiness to be really productive on a long-term basis. So they have more there, what are called northern pecans.
Mm-hmm.
And those are selections that were selected from native plant material discovered along rivers like the Mississippi River and the Ohio River. And so they have a little bit better hardiness.
Mm-hmm.
In general, the northern pecans aren't as large as the southern pecans. And then you get into North Dakota, what can grow here? Well, they pushed a little bit further and they discovered some pecans growing along the upper Mississippi, along the Iowa-Illinois border. And those are considered ultra-northern pecans. That's the furthest north that pecans have been found in their native range.
Do we think that these are planted by humans or squirrels, or how did they get up there?
The thought is that Native Americans moved them along, but I don't know that there's any documentation of any of that.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Hmm.
So ultra northern pecans are, the tree is fully hardy in North Dakota and on up into Canada. But the nuts don't mature here. In order to get pecans, you have to have a tree that's hardy, and you have to have a nut that matures within our growing season. And there's only a few cultivars of ultra northern pecan that will mature in our growing season. There's a person in Bismarck that's been growing nuts for a long time, so he's done some background. I was able to talk to him and, and get some information. He's got one that's called P3 pecan that was selected by a person named Carl Weschke, who was a nut, a tree nut. it fits. In the Twin Cities, he was actually a medical doctor that had a passion about growing nut trees. And he had pecans and hickories and chestnuts and hazelnuts and a wide range of different kinds of nuts on his farm in adjacent Wisconsin. And P3 pecan is one that was discovered after he died in his orchard. And it produces mature nuts in Bismarck about every other year, about 50% of the years. Again, we'd like them to be every year, but every other year for getting pecans in North Dakota is a pretty good deal.
Seems pretty great.
In Fargo, we have more heating degree days, heat units within our growing season. This particular tree is planted on the south side of a windbreak, which is going to add heat units. I expect once this tree comes into bearing age, if we have the right cultivars of pecan on it, we will get pecans almost every year, if not every year. At least 70%, I'm estimating, which is a big deal for North Dakota.
Yeah, that is.
Ultra northern pecans are smaller than southern pecans, but when I eat a southern pecan, I really like it, but when I eat a bunch of them, there's kind of a background bitter taste. Ultra northern pecans don't have that background bitter taste. They're just the sweet, nutty pecan flavor. So the reward is smaller, but better.
Well, I'm honestly surprised not to hear that there could be a nut tree that comes into, you know, a harvestable yield in North Dakota, as much as that you said it was around the Bismarck area, because only 2% of North Dakota has any kind of measurable forest here, and a lot of that is on the eastern part as you start to get closer and closer into Minnesota. There's a lot more moisture. Trees in the nut family typically tend to be very water intensive to grow. As you start to get out to Bismarck and west, you start to run into a lot more of that arid kind of western climate. Do you find that you end up having to do, not exactly like an east versus west cultivar, but differences even just within North Dakota of the same cultivar?
Oh, there's so many variations on that question. Last year in Bismarck, on my friend's P3 pecan, his trees did struggle, and they grew, had almost no growth last year, and they were really struggling. You're right. The thought is that the drought last year that was so severe did damage that. And so we've talked about that. There's another possible rootstock for pecans, a bitternut hickory as a possible rootstock that would be more drought hardy, that might do better in western North Dakota. So we've talked about that possibility. And I have some bitternut hickory rootstocks in my little nursery in my backyard that I'm going to be grafting some pecans onto to try just that. The problem is, in our area, our heavy clay soils in the Red River Valley are the opposite extreme. Many of the nut trees don't handle heavy soils. They need more oxygen in their roots than what our heavy clay soils might provide. So you have to adjust for each different condition, and you probably have to be a plant nerd to figure out
you gotta know where the microclimates are.
What's gonna work for each for each kind of plant to do its best.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're looking for. I've identified about a dozen different pecans cultivars, just based on going through the literature, that have a short enough growing season to mature in North Dakota. In fact, probably some up to the Canadian border, that I think we can be using here. Now we need, there's only one kind been grown, so now we need to try those different kinds. On this particular pecan, I'll be grafting different types and top working it. So
what
we
does
can.
What does top working mean?
Top working means grafting a different kind of pecan onto a different branches of the tree. So we'll have different cultivars of pecans growing on the same tree, and over time we'll be able to tell which ones are going to mature the most often and maybe be the best quality nut as far as cracking, as far as taste, as far as season length, all those kind of things.
Yeah.
So on one tree, we can evaluate a bunch of different things.
Well, you really have to think about not just how the food will grow, but the experience of eating the food, even just how that nut will crack, will make a world of difference if you are trying to launch this into the consumer market. If it's not something that consumers are going to use, how much time do you spend thinking about just, you know, is this food good?
I've thought about that for every plant that's in here. In my view, every plant that's in here has good fruit. I've avoided planting some kinds of fruit just because I don't think that fruit is good. The problem is that's a personal conclusion.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I think is good or not good may not fit with the next person's thought of what's good and not good. And so I try not to limit it too much that way, but how can I avoid my personal biases?
Without getting too thick into the weeds here and too deep into the science, but in just general terms, when it comes to developing cold hardiness, what do you have to do to plants and to trees to try to make them more able to tolerate some of these temperatures and the winds that we get around here?
There's a lot of aspects to that, and you have to try to not get into the weeds.
Yeah.
There's a theory, and I think it's established, that a plant that is not so hardy here, if it grows here and produces fruit, that fruit somehow is more cold tolerant. So you experiment with plants that aren't quite cold tolerant and get some fruit from those in those years that you're lucky to get fruit, and then you plant that out, and that's liable to be more cold tolerant. That's the theory, and it's apparently well established. But there are other things. So some people think, well, my plant isn't quite cold tolerant, so I'm going to plant it on the south side of my house, and that'll give it some more warmth.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly the opposite of what you want to do. For growing apricots, they aren't cold tolerant in terms primarily that they're flowers bloom too early for us, and we often get spring freezes, and that takes out our crop. That's the most limiting thing on apricots here. Well, so people plant them on the south side of their house, so they get even earlier flowering, and that's a mistake. Plant them in a site where the soil remains cold, but the plant grows up into the sunshine, and that will result in that plant flowering later. You can plant it, you can manage the snow, you can put up a snow fence and cause a bigger snowdrift where that tree is growing, so that maybe you gain a week. The snow melts, maybe it'll take a week for that snow to melt compared to the surrounding area, and you gain a week. That can avoid a frost for
enough.
You. That can make a big difference in getting fruit production.
Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, you're welcome. Pleasure to do this.